Nadine Track, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
So tell me about your upbringing and early education in Lebanon.
Well, I was born during the Civil War in Lebanon. I studied audiovisual, so it's cinema, advertising.
You grew up in Beirut?
I grew up in Beirut. I was born and grew up in Beirut.
And you worked with Saatchi & Saatchi for a time?
I worked with Gray worldwide advertising agencies, multinational advertising agencies. And after working as a TV producer for those ad agencies, I always wanted to be more creative, to do less commerce and less selling, more art. And I always had this little frustration of, you know, pushing the director and grabbing the camera. So finally I did it when I came to Quebec. But before that, I became photographer in Montreal, but I experienced photography back in Lebanon.
You began there.
I began taking pictures actually when I was a volunteer in the Red Cross back then, and it kind of helped me to understand what was going on at the time. It was like a shield for me.
Was it a way to distance yourself?
To distance myself from what was happening, to look at it through more objective eyes, and most importantly, to explain it to me first, so I could be able to explain it to others. I always had this urge to explain things, to understand things. And this is what I did with my camera during my Red Cross days. I used to take my camera and accompany my fellow first aiders, mm-hmm. my first aider friends, and take pictures of what they were doing. Sometimes I would take the camera and go for a walk, visit Palestinian camps, for example, which were in Lebanon, or some villages, you know, destroyed, like after post-war or mm-hmm. post-battle pictures too. That was my experience. I was an amateur photographer then, and it's when I moved to Montreal 10 years ago that I decided to study photography. So I studied it at Collège Marsan for 2 years, and after that, I started going on trips and doing on the road pictures to tell a story.
These were trips that were basically journeys to take photographs.
Yes, they were destined to for this. Mm-hmm.
Let's just go back a couple of steps. Tell me about your first impressions of Canada.
When I first came here, I was asked to present lots of proofs of my experience. For example, you know, proof of my diploma, proof of where I worked. And apparently the proof was never enough proof. Reason why I thought of photography, because I was like, you want proof? You've got it. Here it is. You know, it's printed in black and white or in color. You have it. This is what I know. This is what I know how to do, and you can see it clearly. So one of the reasons I really thought seriously about photography. It was very hard to get into the movie business or the advertising agencies. And it was always difficult for employers here to investigate if my CV was, you know, was as it was written, and you have to make international calls and to check about my background, which not lots of employer would like to.
They don't want to go to that extent.
Exactly. So, but I'm glad, because of you know, I had to start from zero. But for me, I took it as a chance to start from zero And I did it with photography.
You made an opportunity out of it.
Exactly.
So tell me about your travels then in Canada. You came to Quebec.
I came to Quebec as a Lebanese immigrant. You and you get your passport. You're proud. Hey, I'm Canadian now, you know. And you say, okay, what about my heritage? If anyone asks, like, what would I say about Canada? I don't know much. I don't want to be like most of, you know, newcomers and who get the passport and just say, I'm a Canadian, I can travel all over, you know, Europe and America without visa, and that's it, you know. I wanted to understand the heritage, so I was curious. I went to started visiting some, you know, First Nation boutiques and old ports, and then bought my first dream catcher and tried to go into the spirituality, the proverbs of the Aboriginal people. And little by little, I wanted to know more, and I felt some resistance in with Quebecers, especially. There's some what do we say, gêne?
Reticence.
Reticence to talk about the heritage. There was reticence to talk about the heritage. It's like maybe we're not really proud of it or of the history. So,
but of course, you came after the Oka crisis, which was a moment of great tension, and you know, it raised a lot of issues that are in some ways only beginning to be dealt with now.
Exactly. Like now I'm looking at it with how Canada accepted I have to look for my words.
Truth and Reconciliation Commission?
Yes, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission accepted the cultural genocide. So, well, this is a very brave step. And then, you know, I was looking at it and wouldn't understand that why is it kept such, like, hush? Why is it a secret? Why no one wants to talk about First Nations or, you know, and I was told that you'll find nothing. Don't, what are you looking for? You're going to find, it's not what you think. This is a fantasized picture in your head you're having. You're going to find alcoholism and poverty in reservations. So what you're looking for is almost like, what do we say, exterminated.
It's gone.
It's gone. So.
And yet your photographs are so magnificent.
Exactly, because I was determined to look for the picture that was in my head. And I said, no matter how far it's going to take or how far I'm going to go, I'm going to find those people that I think still exist. It's such a beautiful culture, like it can be forgotten completely. So I went to Saskatchewan and I went up north until I found this Cree tribe, Flying Dust.
That's the name of the tribe?
Yeah, I love it. And it's actually a Cree tribe who stayed in touch with their sources, with their elders, with their spirituality. And you see it. You see it in their skin, that it's been in touch with nature, with in their expression. There's this, you know, sadness and pride and nostalgia, all this together. And you see that it's faces that's been exposed to nature, to harsh winter, to sun. And it's exactly what I was looking for. And that Cree tribe, Flying Dust, they were a lot in contact with their elders. They do meetings every week with their elders, try to get their wisdom, stay in touch with that. They do a lot of...
They're still living very traditionally.
Yeah.
I was wondering, how did you manage to get them and capture them in their full regalia, in the sense that so much of this is for ceremonial expression now? You wouldn't really see, I mean, basically, yeah. Aboriginal people are across the country.
They put it on for the picture, exactly. It was very classical portraits, you know, and poses.
Did you get to know them?
Yeah, I lived with them for a week before, and you know, being a Lebanese to help for them to open up.
How was that?
Because I made a kind of parallel between Palestinian camps in Lebanon and reservations in Canada. They kind of, you know, saw that I was looking at them in a different eye.
They could relate.
That I could relate to what I lived in Lebanon too. So I was invited by the chief of this tribe in his big house in Boiron. What do we say the rounded the wooden house.
The long house.
In Boiron, that's made with the
with wood.
Yeah, with wood, the tronc d'arbre. you look for it. we'll look for the translation. And I had the most amazing meal with wild meat and carrots from the sand, you know, the earth that we ate it with the earth that's like mixed to it. They didn't even wash it, you know, and it was so tasty. And the meat is the best I've ever had. And when he saw I related to that, he came back with a pile of files that are what do we say on court in
currently being, I guess, worked out in court.
Yes, about residential schools. I heard stories live from a lot of
heartbreaking stories. I'm sure.
Yes. But still, they say it with a lot of pride, stoicism. We say
yes.
Yeah. I got to know them, and I respected the fact that they were making a lot of effort not to drink alcohol. You know, we went for a drink after the shoot, and no one would touch. Would even touch it. They are so reticent about the being alcoholic, and they're so scared to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw they were trying hard to get in touch with the source, the heritage. So that was my experience.
I see you're wearing. Is that from your trip there,
yes,
or is that since?
Yeah,
what is it? Tell me about it.
It was a gift.
It's like a choker necklace.
It's a stone. It's a wishing stone, and with a feather.
It's very beautiful.
Yeah. I was offered, of course, a dream catcher too, and a little, what do we say, tresse?
A braid?
Done with sweet grass. So that I light from time to time. It gives a very nice smell, and apparently the smell goes in the air, and you know, you make your wishes, and the smoke goes into the air, and your wishes like get in contact with the universe.
So it sounds like you came very deeply into contact with the indigenous people of Canada.
Yes, and that was like that tribe was really what was in my head, what I was looking for, and just, you know, science took me there. I was like from friend to a friend. I just expressed my wish to do portraits, and it's a sign after the other that led me there. And before I knew it, I found myself in that place of in northern Saskatchewan. It's called Waterhen Cree Lake.
What's amazing about your photographs too is that while this magnificent regalia and these beautiful, magnificent portraits of such fierce and strong people, you know, the faces are so amazing, yet it's such a modern rendition in terms of how you rendered the photographs. The one of the man, I guess he's dancing, his hands are raised to the sky.
Yes.
It's got this kind of
prayer,
3D effect. What's going on there? What did you do?
Well, I wanted this contrast between the spirituality, the heritage, and the pictures, which are treated in Photoshop, of course, but they are like maybe around 50 layers on each one. It's a lot of work. If you ask me what did I do, I'll tell you I don't know. I don't remember. It was just the
part of the creative process
of the moment, and I wouldn't know how to do it again, actually. Two, that's the first part, which is photoshopping. I wanted to give this dreamy-like, painterly effect. And printing it on metal, too, that was another post-process. It contrasted to the modern side of printing on metal with the heritage side of the portrait.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, like, spirituality and heritage is still there. So it was a way to me for me to show that it's gonna still follow us, and the wisdom even in modern days, whether it's on metal, on paper, and metal too, printing on metal, it helps give life to each scene, because in printing on metal, the whites become transparent. So for the printer, they remove the color white, so it doesn't print. So when you print directly on metal, let's say I have your portrait being taken and the white in the eye, you're looking at, and you're, the white is really bright in the eyes, it's gonna look shiny on a portrait. So it gives it life. It feels like you're really gonna come out of the picture. And
I guess that's what I'm talking about, that 3D effect that
yes,
you see, that you
exactly.
Either you're walking in or they're walking out, coming to you. Yes.
Yeah, that's because of this shiny effect of the metal, of the whites in the metal. Because if there's no whites in the picture, you will not have the metal see-through. And putting light on the artwork, it's gonna bring it up more. Let's say you have this painting next to a window and you have a sunset that's orangey. The whole artwork, the whole parts that are shiny in the artwork are gonna capture the orangey light, and the artwork will look orangey.
So therefore it changes with the light of the day.
Exactly. So if you have a rainy day, you will see, look at it, it's bluish, so you never get bored. It's like real life. It changes with seasons.
Are you living with these images now?
Yeah, I have them in my atelier downtown, and I look at them, actually. I never get bored. And sometimes I look at them and I say to myself, did I do this? Because it doesn't look like it's me who did it, you know, because it changes. So it's like every time a different person did it or painted it.
Well, it was the result of your quest. Who buys your work?
Who buys my work? It's mostly art lovers and people that care about our history and heritage. Mostly intellectuals. I've had some that bought it just, you know, for the fun of the metal, and it was exotic.
It was a novelty.
Novelty, yeah. The wisdom, the you know, the feathers and the colors. Some were more attracted to the subject.
The depth of it.
Yes. Yes, and that spirituality, and especially most of the people who were at my exhibit, they were captured by the eyes, the story the eyes were telling, this mix of pride, nostalgia, sadness, what do we say, douleur.
Suffering.
So it was a mix in the eyes of suffering, nostalgia, pride, contact with nature, history, wisdom.
So what's next for you?
I'm on a quest for spirituality, and we're in an era that's like that's taking more and more into consideration the spiritual universe we're living in. And maybe it's going to be the shaman, and maybe it's going to be Tibet. Because you come another person after each trip, and after being in contact with spiritual personalities. And I would like to live that again. Maybe with Indian tribes, maybe with other cultures. I'm gonna follow messages and we'll see, and signs, and I'll see where it's gonna take me. Because with Saskatchewan, I followed signs. It was from a person to another, and it led me there. And I just, I'm living it. I'm leaving it. I'm leaving it to the universe. So we'll see.
Nadine Track, it was great to meet you.
Thank you.